We will call the first special meeting of the Committee on Energy Finance and Policy for 2008 to order. As you're probably aware, any of the bills that could potentially be included in the capital investment bill have been asked to hear in the committees to which they are relevant, and to possibly make recommendations for their inclusion in the capital investment bill. We will be hearing the bills that have been referred to this committee today, and on Monday we will put together in bill form the recommendations that we sent to the Capital Investment Committee. Mr. Pomeroy will be distributing to members a little form that we have put together for your convenience, in which at the end of the hearing or sometime before, say, noon on Friday, please, you can bring these to Ms. Smith or Mr. Pomeroy with any recommendations that you might have on the bills that we're hearing. And then, as I said, we'll put the official document together on Monday. We do have time constraints today. I think both the Republican and the DFL caucuses are meeting at 4, and the Republican caucus, I believe, is scheduled to meet in this room. So, mindful of the time, we should jump into our agenda. Representative Thiessen, first on the agenda. House File 167.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't know what the official action needs to be, but there is a delete all amendments that members should have.
That is in the packet, members, and the chair will move the H-167 delete all amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, with that, am actually just going to turn it over to the people that actually know a lot more about that, if that's okay, to move things along. I think it's a great project.
I think since we're not... Representative Thiessen, since we're not actually voting on the bill today, I think we should adopt the amendment. So all those in favor of the House File 167 delete all amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The amendment is adopted. Representative Thiessen.
And Mr. Chair, with me today are Len Frame and Mike
Come.
From Mr. Cummins from the Hutchinson Utilities Commission, and Mr. Frame as the founder and chairman of Phoenix Solutions, that actually does the plasma arc work. And so I'm just going to let them explain the project.
Thank you, Paul. Mr. Gilkey, Dr. Carlson. Okay.
Is this better?
That's fine. Mr. Frame, would you please identify yourself for the tape?
I'm sorry?
Would you please identify yourself before you...
I'm Len Frame. I'm founder and currently chairman of Phoenix Solutions Company. We're a Minnesota corporation in Crystal with our headquarters and with a test facility in Hutchinson. As a small business, we have a payroll of about $1.8 million. Which gives you some idea of how small we really are as compared to big businesses. We're the only plasma equipment manufacturer in Minnesota, and we are the largest in the United States and probably the largest in the world. We've delivered over the years, did I say we're 52 years old, 55, over the years we've delivered many systems, most of them for export, lots of them are in Japan, some are in China, some are in Czech Republic, in Romania, we've also delivered to Spain and China. We have developed, as a part of this, plasma arc equipment to produce energy and from renewables and from scrap feedstocks. We have joined with Hutch Utilities to do a demonstration project to demonstrate to the citizens of Minnesota that the plasma systems are ready to provide the clean energy that Minnesotans want, are ready to provide it economically, competitively economically as compared to fossil fuels, and that we're wanting to run a demonstration project so that information about economics and about emissions and the like can become a part of the public record. In this demonstration, we'll demonstrate that the syngas can be made from scraps like computer cases and scrap tires, from renewables like wood chips, corn silver, corn cobs, and from other products, and we'll demonstrate these sequentially in the demonstration program. This project will cost $5 million, and we have Hutchinson Utilities is providing $1 million. Phoenix is providing $500,000. We believe that we'll be able to find another million from non-state sources, and we have the support of the Minnesota Corn Growers and from the city of Hutchinson, and we have a copy of with us for you the letter of intent from Hutchinson Utilities, the resolution of the city of Hutchinson. So that you can see that these things are underway and ready to go. We asked the state to join this partnership so that we can continue Minnesota Industries' lead in supplying plasma equipment throughout the world. We ask that you join this public-private partnership so that the data about emissions, economics, those things can be a part of the public record. We want you to know that the partnership will, the information and the demonstration will be of benefit to the ethanol industry of the state, to the food products industries of the state, to the forest products industries of the state. These systems that we are going to demonstrate can be applied into every one of those industries and serve to make Minnesota broadly more competitive on an industrial base. The project is started. We are ready to drive forward the minute that state money is made available. The money won't sit for several years. It will be used this summer, and the project will start producing data in 2009. Mike has some very good ideas about how this will be of benefit to the utility industry and to Hutchinson, and it's all yours.
I hope I can do as good a job as you did. I'm Mike Gumm, General Manager of Hutchinson Utilities. Hutchinson Utilities is a municipally owned electric and natural gas company. What that means is that we're owned by the residents of the city of Hutchinson, which goes on to say then that we are regulated locally from rates and virtually everything. If there's a customer complaint, they complain to a local resident, or which would be on our board, our commission, and then we'd respond to those complaints. One of the things that I think is unique maybe to this relationship is that Phoenix Solutions is a customer of Hutchinson Utilities Commission. They have a test facility in the city of Hutchinson. And I think that's one of the reasons why this project would be beneficial, at least for our area, because it would be benefiting the Hutchinson Utilities Commission as well as a local business as well as our local ratepayer. One of the things that electric utilities do typically is we perform what's called an integrated resources plan. In the integrated resources plan, really what that is you look at your electrical energy needs, and if you think of it in terms of, say, a mutual funds or investments or something like that, you diversify your various supplies. In this case, electricity can't be picked off a tree or something like that. It needs to be manufactured. So then what you do is you look at the various machines that you have available to you, and you convert one form of energy to another. When we did our integrated resources plan, we know that we need 80,000 megawatt hours of renewable energy. That's what it calls out for. This machine that we're looking at will provide about 10,000 of those megawatt hours. The machine itself is rated to be about 1.3 megawatts. 10,000 megawatt hours turns out to be about 6% of our entire energy needs in our community. That energy will stay locally. I truly would view this to be a public-private partnership in that this grant money would be benefit a Minnesota company as well as a city in Minnesota, and if the state participates in the project, it'll be affordable. And as Len pointed out, valuable information about the emissions and as well as the economics can be provided to public bodies. I guess that's all I had.
Representative Cecil.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I think that. Just to kind of sum up a little bit, the things that I think are exciting about this project is, first of all, it's technology that does two things. One, it actually generates energy and generates it on a local scale, and Mr. Frame made a reference to other types of manufacturing facilities. Actually, I think if this works out and is proven the way we think it will be, it could actually be scaled so that it could produce enough energy at a scaled level to run an individual manufacturing plant. And so there's a very kind of localized basis for it, which I think is important in a direction the state seems to be heading in some sense. Secondly, it uses as a fuel source all kinds of things, including things that are waste products that we would otherwise have to find another way of disposing of. And I think that's a very exciting piece of this. So you're combining both the energy side and the waste management or recycling, use of resources well. It's being done at a local level. And this is the company, and to that point, the PCA right now is looking at this type of technology as a way to deal with some of the hazardous waste issues they have on the east side, among other things. And I think that there could be some synergies involved there through this project. And the last point that Mr. Frame mentioned that's important is that they are the folks both in Minnesota, his company in Minnesota, and really in the country and the world, that are doing this technology right now. And it's just to kind of use the same technology in a little bit of a different way. So I think it's actually a very exciting opportunity for the state. It's $2.5 million matched by $2.5 million in public, in private or non-state sources. And so I just ask your consideration in supporting the project through this process.
Thank you. And we do have questions from members. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Two things come to mind right away. Particularly when you're talking about mixed waste and things like tires, do we have air quality standards in Minnesota right now that you have to meet that would, when you're using such a mix and we don't know what's going to go in? And if we don't have those air quality standards, do we not have to put up the money to develop those standards first?
Do you hear the question?
What I understand,
I have to apologize. I'm wearing two hearing aids, and that gives me an opportunity to hear half of the communications that are addressed to me. I don't always have the chance to decide which half I'm going to hear. But I think you asked about emissions and about air quality in terms of both locally and more broadly in applications of this within the state.
And the question was standards, as well, whether current standards apply to the emissions from this type of facility.
Are there current standards now available?
All of the regulations that are in place apply to this kind of facility. And one of the reasons for our interest in making sure that the information gets into the public record is so that the Pollution Control Agency has enough information to apply those current regulations to this specific kind of technology. And there is not any current really record from existing facilities any place that the PCA can use in addressing what kind of emission control equipment they're going to use or whatever.
Mr. Chairman, if I could follow up.
Representative Wiggins.
The last question, we put some money on the table for PCA to develop air quality standards for some burning of fuels, I believe it was in western Minnesota, because we didn't have those standards. And it's my recollection that we need standards for new kinds of things like this that would need to be in place or some arrangement made with PCA and how that is funded. So and there is not any money to do that in PCA's budget. So it seems to me that's a whole question that needs to be answered. The second question I had is, when you're pulling things in from either a very short distance, wood chips, or tires from a long distance, as we're looking at whether something is going to be effective for reducing our carbon footprint, we have to know what the carbon costs are of bringing it to a facility like this. And I didn't hear you all talk about that particular issue, which I do think needs to be addressed.
So the question is whether the fuel that will be used is locally produced as opposed to has to be brought in from a distance, and what the plan is for that. Does that get at it?
Essentially, if it's having to, thank you. If it's having to be brought in from a far distance, we're having to look at the carbon implications of that. We're just thinking about things differently than we did a couple of years ago. So what is the carbon implications? I doubt if there's enough wood chips or tires in Hutchinson. So how do... for a long-term process. So we have to count that as we're looking at the benefits. We have to look at the other side and say, well, does it weigh out? I have no idea whether it does or not.
Well, Mike will have some thoughts also, but during the demonstration period, we'll be converting corn cobs as an example, and they will certainly come from someplace in the Hutchinson area. And corn stover similarly would come from the Hutchinson area. A reason for that is just that we won't want to pay transportation costs to bring them from someplace else. On the other hand, wood chips we may well decide to bring from a northern Minnesota location because that may be the kind of chip that would be most often used in a similar plant in the future, and wood does vary from site to site, and so it is valuable in a demonstration to use the material from the part of the state that you think is most likely to be a location for a plant.
if we will want to demonstrate that scrap materials can be converted. Scrap tires are one of the kind of scrap materials. Scrap computer cases are another kind of material. There, in those cases, it won't make any difference which part of the state they come from. They're all coming from basically a manufacturer who is a long ways from here. Am I getting at your question?
If I could, Mr. Chair?
Representative McGinnis, we have two other bills to hear in a half hour.
That's fine.
And I have two other people on the list. I'd like to remind members that we do have rather stringent time constraints today. It was my idea that we start an hour late, but that's what rules we're playing by. So, Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a quick question. Didn't we have a plasma torch bill last year at Representative Ansel's district? And I don't know the disposition of that bill. Could maybe somebody in the staff tell me what happened to that bill?
Representative Gunther, that bill is being heard in Representative Rukavina's committee.
Will then it be referred to this committee again?
Not. It will go from there to the Capital Investment Committee.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll cut my three questions to one, and the one question
thank
was
you.
The same as Representative Gunther's. And the money was $400,000 for a feasibility study in the city of International Falls, and my understanding from PCA staff today is that that's just starting to get rolling, so I don't know what we will know from this project that we don't know from the first one, but I'll just leave it at that.
And Mr.
Representative Weston.
Mr. Chair.
Excuse me. Yeah. Representative Tiesman.
Well, and just to respond to that, I think that was a feasibility study. That, as I understand, is a $30 million project in Kuching County. This is a $2.5 million project, and I think that we can get some of the same information. And I don't even know if they have the funding available up there to support that, not to... Well, yes, actually, to compete, yes. So, to be honest. So, I mean, it's a fair question, but I think that this project actually has some benefits that that project may not have.
Representative Western.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two questions. I'll just ask them both. First, can you give us a little elementary breakdown of this technology that's superior, or I mean, that we're trying to pursue? It sounds intriguing, sounds interesting. What's it do different than a normal type of breakdown process? And secondly, some of these emission tests and standards that we're talking about were, in fact, in what Representative Wagenius talked about, biofuels work group that is working with three different plants, ethanol plants are burning wood chips in Little Falls, the one in Benson burning silver and other materials, as well as biomass at the University of Minnesota Morris. All three plants coming online this next year or this year. I'm trying to figure out what we're going to get here that we're not intending to get out of those three sites that the PCA has picked, and are we duplicating some dollars here by doing that? But the two questions, the process, can you give us a little better background or insight on what's unique or about this process and promising, and then the other part?
Mr. Chair, just briefly, I'll let Mr. Frame address it. The key point here, though, is that this isn't actually burning. This is not burning of materials. The plasma arc technology is not about burning things. It's actually a different type of process that generates a synthetic gas that can be used to produce energy as opposed. So, but I'll let Mr. Frame talk a little bit more detail.
Mr. Frame. I'm familiar with
some of the gasification plants. I'm a little familiar with the Chippewa Valley project. There are different temperatures at which the syngas is produced, and the plant of Benson is, I believe, on the order of 600 centigrade of the gas out. There are higher temperature plants at 870 degrees centigrade of the gas out. A plasma plant, in our kind of technology, the temperature out is 1,000 degrees centigrade. Now, in any one of these plants, you're cooling the syngas after it's produced. But the emissions, the tars, the dirt in the syngas increase as the temperature goes lower. That is, the 600 degrees centigrade plant has more emission, and the 800 and 900 degree plant has less, and the plasma is operating at 1,000 degrees and essentially has zero out. What we are doing is to convert all of the hydrogen and all of the carbon to hydrogen gas and carbon monoxide gas, CO, so that the synthetic gas is a mixture of hydrogen and CO. And what we all are a little bit from Missouri, so until we see the data from this kind of thing, we don't truly believe that it is a zero emission prospect. And lenders and et cetera, the whole host of people who are generally supportive, but nevertheless who at some point are called upon to accept these claims, these premises and put their money on them, need a demonstration that actually shows this, and needs a demonstration over a range of feedstocks so that we show that it's true across the board. Did I speak to your question, sir?
Right.
Representative Thiessen, I really apologize for the time constraints.
I appreciate the hearing. Thank you.
I think we'll have to move on to our next presentation today, in fairness to those who are waiting. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And we would invite you, if you do wish to submit further information on the project, which I think is intriguing, get in touch with Mr. Pomeroy, and we'll see that that's distributed before the end of the week.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Representative Norton, House File 2776. Welcome to the committee, Representative Norton.
Thank you, Chair Hilty. I do have an amendment, if you would be so kind.
That is in the packet. There are two amendments. I presume we want to...
Should be just one, I hope.
Oh, okay. We're ignoring the delete all. So that would be then the A08-1094 amendment. The chair will move that amendment. Are there any questions? All those in favor of its adoption signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed? The amendment is adopted. Representative Norton.
Thank you very much. I'm very excited to bring this proposal to you. It kind of came on late in the process. It wasn't an early submission. It's a green project, and it will eliminate emissions from the college campus fossil fuel boilers, replacing the dirtier energy with clean, sustainable, biomass, renewable energy. We're very proud of our Olmsted waste-to-energy burner. We have two in place with a third being built right now. We currently do produce steam, and you'll hear kind of from my county commissioner and county employees a little bit more about what we do with that steam currently, and we hope to expand that with this bonding proposal. And it is a $6 million proposal that would be matched. Half of that will be matching the $6 million from the county. So we're asking you to approve the bond proceeds fund for a $6 million grant. In Olmsted County, we say there's a proper place for all your waste in Olmsted County, and if you live in my community, probably if you talk to anyone, they could all sing that to you because it's something everybody in our county knows and is well familiar with. We're very proud of our county, and I will tell you, just as a side, when I sent out my surveys, I threw on this proposal at the end of my list of what do you think is important in bonding in Olmsted County, and this has come out number one or two by every single person that's returned it with the exception of one. So I think people are seeing the value in green and steam energy, and so I hope you will too. With that, I will introduce our County Commissioner, Dave Perkins, and then we will have, he will introduce the next guest, and they will both have lots of information. You can ask questions as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm David Perkins, Chair of the Olmsted County Board. I'd like to inform you that Olmsted Waste Energy Facility has about a 20-year track record for producing steam. We produce clean energy with emissions well below the permitted levels of from coal, oil, and gas, and we're very well accepted within the community of Olmsted County as one of the cleaner burning. We've been running two burners for 20 years. We burn 200 ton of trash a day in that facility, and we're very well accepted. Now, the USPA, U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, is very well accepted. They've determined that an integrated solid waste management system that combines recycling and waste to energy, diverting waste from landfills, produces less greenhouse gas emissions than other means of managing waste. With running a steam line to the RCTC or the community college campus, which has I think there's four universities out there right now, will show a projected savings of 27% on their heating and air conditioning. And there's a letter attached there from Don Cipolla, the president of RCTC, supporting this project. And the Board of Commissioners has also in a resolution that we passed that we are on record that we will commit $6 million to match the bonding fund for this project. And we will be ready to start this project in midsummer or early fall. I'd like to introduce John. Pardon?
Go ahead.
I'd like to introduce John Helmer. He's our director of waste energy for Olmsted County.
Mr. Helmer, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just wanted to point out a few other benefits that this project would bring. It would stabilize some of the energy costs that the college is experiencing. We have an agreement with our major customer, who is the federal U.S. federal government. The Federal Medical Center has a prison right next to our facility, and they've been basically set the rate. And we have to use their process, and we apply that process to all of our customers, including our county customers and our non-county customers. So it buffers over the peaks and valleys of the energy markets throughout the season. As Commissioner Perkins mentioned, it looks like the economic feasibility study that was done and the preliminary design that was done about 2 years ago has shown that the energy savings at that time to be about 27% of the energy costs of the campus. It would displace natural gas, and it would also possibly displace coal-fired electrical-generated power that's used for cooling, depending on how all of the buildings are hooked up. Some of them are ready to go. They already use hot water heat and a chilled water system. Others will have to be modified if hooked up to the new buildings that were built in the last few years, and the retrofits are all ready to go for this system. So we look at that as a plus. Obviously, there's something in it for the county. We're going to have another good steam customer, which will help offset our waste disposal costs. All of our revenues come We have an enterprise fund, and all the revenues are from either the tipping fees for the disposal of the waste or the energy revenues. So we don't have any tax dollars going into our system. It's worked for 20 years very well. We have contracts with our local haulers to bring us the waste. So we're pleased with that system, and we're hoping that we can pick up additional steam customers and expand our system. This will, because of biomass renewable energy, waste energy is classified as that by the state, it will apply towards that renewable energy objective of 25 by 25. So we see that as a benefit for the state. And obviously the funding does come from a portion of the funding that the campuses comes from the state coffers, and we'll be saving some of that money in the operational budget. The rest of the handouts, Don Cipolla is the president of Rochester Community College, letter is in there. It explains some of their perspective of what they're doing. They're actually one of our existing customers. One of their buildings is on our other steam line that runs to the west, and they've been very pleased with that and are considering expanding some of the uses there. And the county board did pass a resolution, first one of the 2008 year, that supports this project and also commits local monies. And then the last two pages are a schematic diagram of the steam line running from our existing facility over to the campus. And I would just note that either the county owns all of the property or the state through the campus owns all of it. So we wouldn't have any problems with getting the line put in from that standpoint.
Thank you. Representative Gunther, you had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To either one of the officials there, this would cost, based on the 20-year useful life of this system, it would cost approximately $850,000 a year to heat the campus. What is the existing heat bill, and how many other customers do we have? I know Rochester, through the, I think it's at the Kaler Hotel facility, is one of the burning systems, and I think that goes to heat a host of downtown properties, and you have a central heating district. Would this also go, besides heating the college, to other entities that could be using this steam, or is this strictly for the college?
Mr. Helms?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is running on the east side of the Olmsted County campus, so there are some additional spots where there could be buildings built that would be on this. Mm-hmm. And there is a neighboring property currently owned by the state of Minnesota, the DNR, that is used to being used for wildlife feeding, and that has been stopped and is moved further out into the country with the expectation that ultimately that land would get developed. So there is some potential, yes,
and,
for
and we do serve 26 buildings in the city of Rochester.
I know that.
And most of them are privately owned, or like the hospitals and some of the library downtown, the auditorium and that. So
my other question was approximately how much does it cost?
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. How much does it cost approximately to heat the campus now, and what are your projected costs in the future?
Mr. Helms.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I don't have that number directly in front of me. I do have that projected savings and the difference of the projected steam rates of 20%.
That answers my question, projected savings. Thank you.
Representative Norris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just curiosity. So this is a $12 million project in total, and it's a mile and a quarter. Is there something unusual about this, the route that it's taking? It seems very expensive to put a pipe in the ground, but I don't know anything about it, so can you just enlighten me a little bit?
Mr. Helmer.
Okay. Yeah, actually, it's a multitude of pipes. We have to have a pipe that takes the steam down to the campus, and we have another pipe that brings the water back. It's a closed-loop system, and we reuse that water in the boiler system again. In addition to that, there has to be a number of places where the water is trapped out of the steam line, so there's manholes and structures and equipment that's inside that. And then it also has to be protected from the soils and the environment so the pipes don't corrode. So it is a very expensive per foot cost of a pipe.
Okay. Thank you.
Further questions? Seeing none, thank you, Representative.
Chairman.
Representative Western.
Just briefly, what I'm just puzzled with a little is you talk of 27% savings, and that's with the state infusing $12 million, I'm assuming. If the state doesn't infuse $12 million, what what are the savings then? And it's a little bit of a shell game to call it savings if the state is sticking in $12 million and then, or $6 million of the 12, and you see what I'm saying? Is there is the savings exclusive of the $6 million, or what is the real savings if we didn't put the $6 million in? Then what kind of savings would we be giving the campus if they have to fund this themselves? And maybe they just wouldn't get a 27% savings. It maybe would be 15 or 12 or 20 or some other number. Do you follow my question?
Mr. Helmers.
Yes, that's true. The $6 million that we're asking for from the state would be an investment towards saving that 27% on over the life of the project. It would have a payback period. If we don't have any state money in here, it would be a payback period to the county of about 17 years before we would actually break even if we invested the full amount in the project. So we're asking for the help. It's basically a no-go. If we don't get outside money, we would not make that investment because it's too long of a payback period for it. So that's why we're approaching the state, because we see it as a mutually beneficial process.
Very well. Thank you, Representative Norton.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Knuth. House File 1951. Representative Knuth.
And I do have a delete all amendment, which I'd like to move.
If you would like to move that. Members, you do have the DE4 amendment in your packet. All those in favor of its adoption, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 1951, as amended, is really a chance for government to lead on some conservation and efficiency measures in our state and our local government buildings. The first part of the bill, the Sustainable Building Guidelines, builds on a program we already have that requires state buildings as well as buildings with state bond score to be 30% better than the state energy code, and this would expand those design guidelines to major renovations. And so I'll have a testifier talk about that. That's the first half of the bill. The second half of the bill is called Green Bonds, and it's using state bonding money to help our local governments lead when they're building and doing major renovations on their city or school district buildings. And there's lots of excitement and ideas around this, and local governments are starting to want to do this, but they can sometimes run into some barriers to be able to pay for the incremental costs, both in the pre-design and design work, because it takes more thought at the front end to do a more sustainable or a more energy efficient building that conserves energy. So there's part of the money that could be used there, as well as to pay an incremental part of the cost of construction of a more energy efficient building. So it's a tool for our local government to lead the way in the direction we need to go to be saving energy in our state and local government buildings. I also want to thank Representative Callen for helping with this bill and talk through some of the ideas. So I have a few testifiers to talk more in detail about the bill.
And who would like to start?
Okay, I can start.
Mr. Chairman, representatives, my name is John Carmody. I'm the director of the Center for Sustainable Building Research at the University of Minnesota. And our center is part of a team that did the original state building sustainable building guidelines, along with Rick Carter here from LHB Architects and the White Group, another energy consulting firm. Our center also assists state and local government, both in terms of establishing guidelines and standards, as well as helping them on individual sustainable building projects. And recently I was on one of the working groups for the Minnesota Climate Change Advisory Group. I'd like to just give you a couple of sentences of introduction to this issue and then address the renovation part of this. I'm sure everybody here knows that buildings account for at least 65% of total electricity use, 36% of the primary energy use, and if you look at the embodied energy, transportation, materials, and so forth that go into buildings, it actually becomes nearly half, or 48% of all energy use can be attributed to buildings. The B3 guidelines, which went into effect for all new state-bonded buildings in January 2004, so far have been used on 50 state projects, and at an estimated square footage of 3.7 million square feet, and the projected cost savings to the state are $1.67 million per year, and the carbon savings are 47,000 tons per year. So far that's been a very successful project. Our office continues to work with all these teams, track it, and so forth. The original guidelines, however, did not address renovation, and the fact that this bill adds renovation, major renovation, is, in our view, a real positive development. It's very doable, and the bill specifies that we would write or adapt the current guidelines to be applied to renovation, and our team is prepared and willing to do that as part of our work. That's all I have to say. I'll introduce Rick Carter here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative. My name is Rick Carter. I'm an architect with LHB, Architects and Engineers in Duluth and Minneapolis. I'm also the project manager for the B3 project, which includes the guidelines that John was talking about. I'm a member of the Climate Change Advisory Group and primarily work on designing energy-efficient buildings. So first I just want to reiterate what John said about expanding the guidelines to major renovations. It's very doable, it's very applicable. It was good to get started with new buildings so that we could get comfortable with it, but now we're really ready to go and include major renovations. And then just briefly to talk about the green bonds, the grants to municipalities. I think they're really crucial, and the intention here is to get cities, counties, and schools to use the sustainable guidelines to make energy-efficient buildings, whether they're required to by law or not. It would cover the incremental cost of pre-design and design work, as well as some of the incremental cost of the construction work. The construction work would be limited to items that have longer than five-year paybacks, which would really push the envelope a little bit on the construction side. But I also really wanted to emphasize the pieces that would be funded on the pre-design side include things like applying these guidelines, doing things like energy modeling or energy simulation, which we can do so well and we don't do nearly often enough, doing commissioning and doing data collection to make sure what we're doing and what we say we're doing is actually happening. So I think I'll stop there and let you ask questions. Thank you.
Any representatives, Canoes? Did you have any other testifiers?
Mr. Chair, we have one more testifier from Chisago City to talk about a project they're working on. Just the state for the record, the League of Minnesota Cities, we've been talking about this bill, and they do support the bill and talk with some of the other local government groups as well. But we have one more testifier. If we could.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is John Peckman. I'm the city administrator from Chisago City. And I've been working with Representative Kalin as the city looks at building a much-needed public works facility, a roughly 14,000-square-foot facility that we've been in the planning process of going into about a year and getting our funding in place. What I want to say is that we really tiptoed into the green building idea about a year ago. And now we are wanting to be on the greening edge. You've heard of the bleeding edge. We want to be on the greening edge. We want to be a model project. We want to set the standard high, and we want to show to other municipalities and local governments in our area that it can be done. We have begun the process for our LEED certification, which the member from LDH or the engineer has mentioned, which does require the commissioning, and that's an important component whereby our, you know, there'll be some measurable outcomes that an independent auditing firm, if you will come in and see how we've done and actually, you know, measure our performance. We're excited about that. We are pushing to do a 50% reduction in many areas of our building. We believe that we can achieve over a 30% reduction in energy performance, and we believe we can achieve well over 50% in our reuse and recycling of our waters at our facility. We believe we can do this through a rainwater collection system and a gray water recycling system in much of the activities the public works employees use in cleaning vehicles and the day-to-day operations. The design items we have been exploring include the geothermal heating system, supplemental methane heat off of a large sewer main that runs right past the proposed building site. We're looking at how much methane gas that produces as a supplemental heating source. The green roof, wind turbines combined with solar power for our energy use, and the rainwater capture system, which I mentioned as part of our almost complete reduction in domestic water use. Our Chisago City Council has been very excited about this project, and again, there's an excitement and there's a reality, and what we're finding as we start to become experts in a field that's rapidly expanding and trying to learn as much as we can is that reality and that excitement don't always meet each other. And so we're very excited about this field. We're very excited about the possibility to be a model for others to follow, and we want to set the standard very high. So I thank you for your time.
Thank you. There are questions from members. Representative Welty. Thank you, Chair Hilty, and to the testifiers, or to Representative Knuth. Could we potentially be paying for, I just want to understand what this bill actually pays for, could we potentially be paying for a lot of pre-design work that never gets implemented?
I can take a crack at it. In particular, one of the pre-design pieces, Mr. Ricardo, one of the pre-design pieces would be the energy analysis, which is really sort of the way we set the stage for all this, a way of determining how much energy the building would use, and then applying all the various systems, like the ones that were just mentioned, geothermal, conservation, and determining how much energy can be saved by spending how much money up front. So even though you may not apply all of the strategies you look at, the system of doing the energy modeling is crucial. It's fairly low cost compared to the overall payback. It's just usually not expected, not in the pro forma, so it's hard to get the money to have that happen up front.
Representative Welty.
Thank you. And just one follow-up question. I appreciate it, sir. Could you tell me, do you have any estimates right now as to, out of all the projects that you do pre-design work for, where you actually look at geothermal and all of these other applications, how many of them you actually, when it comes time for construction, do not do any of the recommendations or any of the energy cost savings?
Mr. Carter.
I would say that that our experience has been that it never happens that they don't do any of them. Normally, there's a range. We'll look at sort of a high, medium, low savings, and I would say most often people sort of land in the middle. You know, it's very common to look at something that's maybe 20% better than code, 25% better than code, 30% better than code, and they'll tend to land in the middle on paybacks that are in the 3 to 5 year range. But having that information, and you have that information really in the design phase before you finish the construction documents, is so valuable that you can make other choices. You don't necessarily have to just add money, you're just spending money differently. So I would say most things get incorporated one way or the other.
Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to make comment on the with regard to the redraft here, or the delete everything amendment, it says that on page 3, line 3.7, grants may only be applied for additional construction or renovation costs that would not be recovered from energy savings within 5 years. And I encourage you to also include or operational savings. We want to stretch these dollars as far as possible.
And we know how much the first bill did talk more about the operational savings and how that would be included in it, because like go to LEDs or LED diodes, for example, you don't have to change light bulbs for decades compared to, you know, every couple of years with some standard lighting. So there's savings like that that really need to be referred to here so we can stretch these dollars as far as possible. This would be my recommendation. I'm not ready to make any changes today. It's just a suggestion, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative.
Further questions? Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question from, I guess, Mr. Carter or Mr. Carmody, whichever is most appropriate. In working together on this bill with Representative Knuth, one of the things we wanted to, in consultation with the department, we wanted to make sure that the design assistance program, that the utility-based program, that we're not, that the department, when cities have ideas and, or counties to go this route, that we're maximizing the use of the existing utility programs, but recognizing that there's a real upfront design intensity and design cost in good energy-performing buildings, but that achieving something like 40% or 50% better than code is, there's hardly an incremental construction cost, but it's largely being sensitive to where south is and how you treat glazing on the south side and infiltration and a few basic design principles from there. Would you agree with the statement that the incremental cost in the 30, 40, 50% reduction range compared to code are very small on the construction side, but that we're doing the right thing by focusing on the design side?
You know, Mr. Chairman, Representative Kalin, I think some of the statistical information from the WAC group who have done this many, many times would say that in that 30% better than code range, the paybacks are in the 1 or 2 or 3 year range. So there is some additional incremental cost that's going to grow a little bit as you get 40 or 50% beyond code, but paybacks are still pretty short. And what this would allow you to do is, if you're going to jump from conservation and good lighting controls to get to, you know, 2, 3, 5 year paybacks up to, say, geothermal, which today might have a 7, 8, 10 year payback, there's some funding to be able to allow you to do that. Does that answer the question?
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
Further questions? Representative Hackworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, a question for you, Mr. Chairman. Can we do and offer any amendments on this now, or are we going to just take testimony today, or are we going to see this again next week when we can possibly make some changes to this, or what's the plan? Are we just taking testimony today, or can I offer an amendment?
We are actually. We'll bring out all three of these bills up on Monday before submitting our recommendations to the Capital Investment Committee. I think with considering that we were supposed to be out of here 5 minutes ago, if you would
be
comfortable
as long
with waiting until Monday, that would be fine.
Okay, thank you.
See nothing further, Representative Canoes? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Let me remind members that we are looking for your recommendations. We did have minutes in the packet today that I will defer passage of until Monday, or consideration of until Monday, and we have a couple new pages that I did want to introduce, but we'll do that on Monday as well. This meeting is adjourned.